All right, we're going to do a 2-minute meditation. You got the clock?
Yeah.
My Creator, I am now willing that you should have all of me, good and bad. I pray that you now remove from me every single defect of character which stands in my way of being useful to you and my fellows.
Grant me strength.
As I go out from here, to do your bidding. Amen.
This one's called clarifying. Express yourself. That is meaning. Ask yourself each day, what remains unexpressed within me? Whatever it is, bring it out. But be judicious. The rantings of mad people do not yield greater freedom. Those who are with spirit use expression to find greater understanding of themselves and to find liberation from ignorance and circumstance. All that is good and unique in you should be brought out. If you do not do this, you will be stunted. Never hold back, thinking that you will wait for a better time. The good in you is like the water in a well. The more you draw from it, the more fresh water will seep in. If you do not draw from it, the water will only become stagnant. What is dark, perhaps even evil, inside you must be expressed in a proper way too. Lust, hatred, cruelty, and resentment. These must all be carefully taken out of yourself, like finding a bomb and taking it to be detonated harmlessly. Your heart may be quite a minefield, but you must persevere in clearing it if you are to plant crops and frolic without concern. Ask yourself each day, what remains unexpressed within me? Unless you can express it, you will not clarify your inner nature.
Tarek, I'm not at it.
Tarek.
I remember sitting in my first Fifth Step, and all those days of writing inventory. My first inventory was about an inch binder. I got clean and sober writing the Joe and Charlie inventory with the checklist, and you had to write out a sentence for the fourth column. And then my dad was on there, and I had 16 or 17 different resentments towards my father. He never came to my basketball games. He forgot my birthday. He hit my mom. He put me and my brother in a position where we had to physically beat him up when we were in high school to get him off our mom and or grandmother. He was verbally abusive. He was absent. All these things, right? And I'm doing my first Fifth Step, and I remember my sponsor, after each one, like, what's so vital in the first Fifth Step to me is discovering our hypocrisy. Every single resentment that you have, that I had, if I was mad at a person because they did A, if I looked in my life, I had done A to a lot of people. I started to realize how much of a hypocrite I had become. And the realization of that was very freeing for some reason. To realize that I was no longer a victim, that these people hadn't done these things to me. If I really looked hard and I walked across the bridge from the third to fourth column, I would see that I had done something based on fear, driven by fear. I did something dishonest. You know, dishonesty, I either lied, left information out, or I was delusional in the situation. And I was selfish in some way, an attitude typically. And I had done something to get what I thought I needed to be okay. Something that had to do with my security. And as I was reading my Fifth Step, this guy asked me, have you ever been physically abusive with someone that you care about? Yeah. Next resentment. Have you ever forgotten someone's birthday that you love? Yes. Next question. Have you ever verbally abused someone that you love and care about? Yes. And then at some point, after I answered yes to every single question, my head dropped in the Fifth Step. And I remember raising my head, and I was looking at Randy, and I had become my father. I became my father. And in that realization, compassion was born for my dad. Now, granted, I turned 16, 17 years old. I excommunicated my dad from my life, and I had nothing to do with him until I got sober at 31. So 14 years have gone by with very little dialogue with my father. And I go to make amends to him. And I start rattling off all the things of why I was there, what I had done. I had not been a good son. I had abandoned him. I didn't realize he had done the best that he could. I had never once asked him what happened. And, you know, what happened in my dad's world from the time he was born until he had me later in life? My dad didn't have me till he was in his early 40s. Well, a man goes through a lot of life events that shape and mold the person you become. I'd never taken the time to ask him what kind of childhood he had had. All these things came up in our minds. I asked my dad what I could do to make it right. He says, I just want you to be happy, and I would like you to spend time with me. And so from that moment on, if I was in town on Sunday, I was going to take my dad to lunch, and most of the time we were going to go see a movie, right? Or we would go do something. You know, sometimes we go to, you know, all kinds of things around Atlanta. But that was the bulk of it, was lunch or dinner and a movie. And I grew very close to my father over those 9 years. And so he was diagnosed with cancer in the summer of 2016. And I was the one that would take him to chemo on Fridays. And I just bonded with my father. And we'd already bonded. And I fell in love with my dad. And then the cancer began to spread. And this was the March of 2017. My wife announces to me she no longer wants to be married to me, and she asks me to move out. My dad goes into hospice. Actually, it's palliative care, where, you know, the nursing bed's at the house. So because I had lived this program for a significant period of time, and the way you live and your behavior speaks much louder than the words that come out of your mouth, me included. The way I live is so loud that I don't need to say a lot. And because my family had seen me live a certain way for so long, my mom invited me to bring my dad into her home to take care of him while he was passing away. And I was able to sit with my mom over my dad and sit with my stepdad over my dad. My stepdad actually helped. He helped me change my dad's diapers. How does that happen, man? It happens because of the power of Alcoholics Anonymous. That's how something like that happens. And so my wife asks me to move out. I don't have anywhere to live. I'm living out of a bag. My friend Lindsay brings me into her home. I'm allowed to stay in her guest bedroom. And I remember one night in specific, I'm on the ground in the fetal position. My marriage is falling apart. I've got all these weird thoughts in my head about me being a member in the Atlanta recovery community that is somewhat a pillar in the recovery community, yet my marriage is failing. What is everybody going to think? Blah, 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 blah. And I'm in the fetal position on the ground, and I would venture to say I'm almost begging for God to keep me safe and protected. Keep me safe and protected. Keep me safe and protected. And I remember asking one of my mentors about it, and he said, let me ask you something about your prayer life. Do you notice a degree of sincerity in your prayers and passion that you haven't noticed in a while? I said, yeah. He goes, that's beautiful. He said, unfortunately, it takes life events like these in order to kick up that sincerity in the prayer. And so immediately when I was having this conversation with him, it shifted my perception of the experience. And then he was the one that guided me into your primary purpose in this experience, because you and your dad are clean and have no unfinished business, thank God, because of the amends process, your task now is to witness your dad's transition and make it as comfortable as possible. So I began to play music in the room my dad was in. I sat by his side with my prayer beads, and I would meditate and chant and pray next to my dad. And I was there. I was present for that experience, and that was because of the amends process. The amends process made that possible. And the fact that I could be there and whisper in my dad's ear that I'm going, well, you can go, we're clean. And ultimately, I got to a place where I could acknowledge that I would do my best to take care of my brother, because my brother and I have been estranged for a long, off and on for years. I've made my amends to him. We just don't like each other, right? Period. I mean, my relationship with God is straight. That means every relationship in my life is straight. That means I have enemies. It's okay. If everyone likes me, I am a phony. That's it. You know, guys will call me. I had a guy call me yesterday trying. We were talking about his relationship, and I was like, look, I'm not the best when it comes to romance. I'm not the best advice giver when it comes to relationships. Brandon's much better than me at it. But if you want to learn how to have an effective and deep experience with your creator, I'm your man. And I do know if that's the first relationship that has to get addressed. Right. And as I started asking more questions, you start to see, like, you've got all these problems in your relationship with your significant other, but you're taking very little action to address the primary relationship, which is with God. And I'm willing to bet if you paid attention to that relationship, it would change the rest of the relationships in your life. And that's what's important here. And so because of that experience with the amends process and being able to sit there and witness that experience with my dad, and then finally, when he's hanging on and the nurses have no idea why he's hanging on, I do intuitively, because I have an active tenth step. The tenth step has to do with intuition, this vital sixth sense. The big book calls it God consciousness and intuition. I can hear that voice that says, tell your dad to take care. You're going to take care of your brother. And I remember whispering in my dad's ear, because a couple of nights while we were taking care of my dad, you know, I would do one night and then I'd get some rest and then I'd come back. Well, this went on for 3 weeks, and my brother is there the Wednesday night before my dad passes, and my brother breaks down because my brother has so much regret. He abandoned my dad when I didn't. He's never really tried to have a relationship with him. And so my dad and my brother's guilt is there. And and my brother breaks down. So I start to have compassion for my brother. And then on that the Saturday following that Wednesday, I come over, my dad's not doing well. And I leaned over and I was caressing his forehead, and he had this towel on his forehead. And I whispered in his ear that I was going to take care of him and my mom and my brother and my mother. And my dad opened his eyes and he looked up at me and he took his last breath and he left. And it was such a powerful experience to be a part of, because the only reason I was available to have that experience is because of the program of Alcoholics Anonymous and this amends process that we're talking about. And that was the one tornado amends that, you know, I didn't see the full ramification of making that amends until 9 years later. You know, sometimes we don't know what it's all truly about until much, much later. And when I got clean and sober, my first 8-step list, which I have up here if you would like to see it during the break, had 150 people on it. And as time went on, it grew to 230 institutions and people. It took me 8.5 years to approach every institution and every person on that list. I am now closing in, because I've been making some financial amends. I think I'm getting really close to about $30,000 now that I've paid back in almost 15 years. I still have financial amends to make. Okay. I just, you know, like literally over the last few months, I've started donating money again, because a lot of people didn't want their money back. I didn't just put the note card away and say, oh, that's cool, I get to keep that money. I keep the note cards. And I have on them that I owed this person $2,000. I flip the note card over, and as I donate money back into the universe, I start deducting from the money I owe them. You know, it was never my money to begin with. And so I give it back to the universe. What happens as a result of that? I've always had more money than I need. I'm not super wealthy, but I always have more money than I need. I'm always carried, I'm always protected, I'm always provided for. There is no two steps that have more to do with why I am so trusting in this process and trusting in my relationship with God than these steps. And because what ended up happening is, like Dante and Randy, they held my hand, specifically Dante, all the way up to step 8. But when you got to go out and, you know, the sound of making amends, that's the sound of making amends. That's a scary proposition. And it wasn't the 9-step I was terrified of. What was it? I was terrified to just pick up the phone and call. I would have a psychosomatic experience. My body would almost go into convulsions sometimes when I was trying to call someone I hadn't talked to in like 7 or 8 years to acknowledge what I had done to them and actually try to set up an appointment so I could talk to them about it. And event that comes out, I worked for... But look, before I get into these amends, so I held my sponsor's hand, and then I had to go out into the world and make these amends. And there was so much fear associated with these amends, and there was that I had to have faith at the same time. People say faith and fear can't exist in the same house. No, they exist at the same time. And I kept going through the process, and I kept being carried. Now, of those 230, I would have to say, give or take 40 of them, never even responded to my attempt to contact them. And that tells you right then and there, they don't want to see me. Now, another, I'd say 30 to 40 said this, and I never want to talk to you again. Have a nice life. I can't believe you still think about that, man. Go on, move on with your life. I don't even think about that stuff anymore. You really hurt me, but I don't want to see you. I'm glad you're doing well. Peace out. I mean, all kinds of stuff. So that right there takes away about 80. I'm down to 150. Of those, I made direct amends. I don't believe in this thing called a living amends. It's not in our big book. There's no such thing as a living amends. If you attempt to make a direct amends, they're either going to see you or not. If you attempt to contact someone 2 or 3 times and they don't respond, in my book, that amends is complete. What it's all about now is practicing the principles in all our affairs. But I mean, I heard, this was one of those other things, right? That I was listening to a guy say how his sponsor told him that he didn't have to make amends to all his ex-girlfriends, that he just needed to treat his new girlfriends really well. What kind of horse shit is that? It's like when people like they publicly harm somebody, that deserves like a public amends. You know, you committed the harm in front of a group of people. Maybe you should make the amends in front of the group of people. And unfortunately, I have experience with making amends to groups of people. Some of the most powerful amends I made were my ex-girlfriends. And I'm so glad I didn't have a sponsor to try to edit my amends list. You know, I hear stories, you know, of sponsors who sit and look at an eight-step list of sponsees. They can't manage or run their own lives, but they sure as hell want to manage and run their sponsees' lives. So I had these people on this list. One of the I had wrecked a car as a valet, and I got it off the lot, right? And then the lady had come back to file a claim, but they couldn't prove that I was the one that was responsible for it. And I was partying a lot at the time. I don't remember if I'd been up for this one. But anyway, when I got sober, I realized I owed money for this damage on this car. And I had calculated it was, you know, probably $500 worth of damage or something. You know, it was the front lower end of the bumper. And I remember getting sober, and I go to this valet company that no longer existed. And then I found out that the guy who used to own the company, this guy named Mike, I don't want to say his full name, but I knew his full name. And they said, oh, yeah, he went to law school, and he's now a district attorney in Fulton County. I was like, oh, no. And so I remember sitting in my office one day, my home office, and I'm, like, trembling about to pick up the phone to call this man. And it rings, and it rings, and I end up having to leave a voicemail. And I explained to him, you know that, hey, I'm going back through my life. I'm trying to repair all the damage I caused. I'd love an opportunity to sit down with you and talk about it. Please call me if you're willing to meet. And I can't remember the amount of time that lapsed, but he calls me back. And, like, I pick up the phone, and the first thing he says, oh, this is 9-step amends, huh? I was like, oh, damn. He's like, yeah, man, come on down. He's at the state courthouse down in Atlanta. I go down there to his office, and I'm scared. You know, I am fearful of what was going to go down here. And so I go in there, and I'm making amends for the damage I'd done to the car. There was another amends that I had embezzled a bunch of money as a valet for him, but that turned out I owed the money to a different entity. But that was one of the amends, right? And that's why I'm still paying back money to this day, is because of that one. And but I did owe him amends. And it turns out the guy's mom has been sober in Alcoholics Anonymous. That was, you know, a while back. She was like 40 years sober. So, I mean, how does the universe work? You know, it works that way. So and then he asks me, he's like, I don't want the money, but here's what I want you to do with it. He's like, I want you to donate it to the specific organization that helps kids, because his granddaughter had autism, that uses equonics therapy or something like that. That's what equon therapy. So I had to donate. And then on top of that, he goes, I want you to send me the receipt every time you make a donation. You know, what would have happened if I walked out of there not complete? I completed that amends. I sent him all his receipts. It was an experience I had that really allowed me to trust this process, that I am going to be safe and protected through this process. You got a question?
Yeah, quick question. Fire that. So I got two girls who are married now, and I don't, you know, how do you feel about making amends with the woman who's not married? I respect marriage, and I feel like, you know, I don't know what good would come out of me approaching this girl who's already.
Yeah, what good is going to come out of it is your freedom. How free do you want to be? Okay, because this is the stuff I get sometimes. Because here's the question. She's married, so what? I had ex-spouses that were now married. I sent a communication on Facebook Messenger. I didn't make the amends. I said, hey, I hope you're doing well. I've been going back through my life trying to repair all the damage that I caused. I completely understand if you don't want to meet with me. But I need you to know that I harmed you, and I'm willing to make it right. If you ever want to talk about this, here's how to contact me. That's it. You get free in the approach, the eighth step. If she wants to get free, she'll contact you.
She doesn't want – this is one of those areas where so many sponsors start meddling. Who decided that they don't need the amend? Did she decide or did you decide?
Well, mine is just wanting to be respectful of the marriage itself.
Who's deciding who's being respectful, you or her? It's her choice.
Yeah, if she doesn't want to meet with you, she's not going to meet with you. You trying to contact her is not disrespecting her marriage. You know, but this is what people will do when it comes to making these amends.
Yeah. You make direct amends to dope dealers, or do you donate and do stuff like that?
All right, so I ripped off enough guys on the corner that I didn't know, but what I did for them was I donated money to the Atlanta Union Mission, right? I didn't even know who they were. But since I sold drugs, I had a lot of friends that I broke bread with, that I partied with, that I owed money to. I paid all of them back. I had a guy who gave me 1,000 hits of ecstasy, and I disappeared on him. I owed him a ton of money. I didn't approach him to make it right until I was 6 years sober, because I had heard that he wanted to put a beating on me. Right? And I happened to approach him after he'd gotten out of the game and he had gotten married. And it took me, I approached him July of 2013. I made my last payment to him November of 2017. I paid him back all his money. I hear sponsors all the time, you don't pay back the dope dealers, chalk it up to the game. Not true in my experience. Not if these people were people you broke bread with, that you actually had relationships with these individuals. Right? I mean, there was one guy, I had sold him a bunch of fake like pressed ecstasy tablets, you know, and he wasn't a good friend of mine. He ran with some of the same people, but I had to find him when I got sober and pay him back. So, I mean, it goes back to the question I asked this young man. How free do you want to be? How free do you want to be?
The hardest part about trusting God is actually trusting God and believing that God has a power that connects all this stuff and actually has a plan to take care of it. You want to see whether or not somebody trusts God, watch their feet when it comes to steps 8 and 9.
Yeah.
How do you make amends to people that are no longer
here? You write a letter, an honest letter if they cannot be seen. So I had a bunch of those. I had people that I didn't even know what their names were, or women that I didn't have a last name to. And so I wrote letters. For all the females, I wrote the letters and I read them to a female in the program. And then I had a friend, all the males and the people who had passed away, I read all the letters to him. But I wrote the letter as if I was talking to them and God at the same time.
I have multiple answers to this. One of them I won't put on tape. But one of the things is that a guy I sponsored, his dad or his grandfather used to be the head of Georgia State Patrol, taking care of the governor. And he had passed. And he went and he wrote a letter and he went to his graveside and he read it. You go do a graveside amends, something will happen. Guaranteed. Promise you. For my buddy, what happened is police sirens started going off right when he said, "How do I make it right with you?" Coincidence? Maybe. But if you have, I've got enough sponsees that have done graveside amends, that something that was very specific to the person that they were making amends to magically happens.
Yeah.
This power is so much bigger than you can comprehend.
And back to your question, like you know, your mind is fixated on those two women, right? Or however many women it was. One of the things that I've watched guys do is they focus on their worst offending amends, and it distracts them totally from making all the other amends. So if I'm your sponsor and you're going to either do note cards, and I just had these two most recent guys make lists. I wanted them to make four lists. The ones you're willing to do right now, the ones you're willing to do later, the ones you might do, and the ones you're not willing to do. I don't care what you put on any of the lists. So you might put those two women, because you don't want to disrespect their marriage, on that list. I'm not going to make these, right? And let's say you spend a year making a lot of amends and you start having experiences with all these individuals. You will change your thinking. Your perspective on everything will begin to change. Every time we get to this part of the workshop, people throw up their hands and they got this amends they're just terrified about making. Put it on the never list and move on. Go make the ones that you are willing to make.
And there will be one guy, he's not going to hear us right now, so he'll come up and you'll come up with this scenario of this guy that I did this and then that happened, and it's like we can't even figure out what it is that he's saying the amend is for. Before he goes, I got a question about amends. What I'll say is, do the easy ones first. And then he goes, but I want to tell you about this. So he'll start telling it, And then I'll look at Tarek and I'll say, Tarek, what are you thinking? Tarek will go, do you have any other ones? And the guy will go, yeah. And he goes, okay, do those first. Every single time. Maybe not this time, but every single time after the session, somebody will come and ask some twisted amend that, like, just, if that's your last one, cool. Well, let's talk about it then. Let's do the other ones first.
How many amends you got besides that one? How many amends you got besides that one? Huh? Yeah, how many other harms have you created that you can clean up besides that one? A lot, exactly. Yeah, so you wait, put that off to the end.
And I suggest that you read page 78 where it says, perhaps we've committed a criminal offense which might land us in jail if it were known. So the bottom of page 78, there's an answer there for you. Bottom of page 79, it also says we thought he ought to be willing to do that if necessary. But it talks about jail there too. Like this book is pretty complete when it talks about owing money, criminal offenses, other people, divorce, jail, the person we hated, domestic troubles. They're all in here.
Yeah. So there's a guy in my hometown right now. I don't know him very well. He made an amends at a year sober that put him in prison for 4 years. He stayed sober the entire 4 years he was in prison. And now he's got out and he's got a magical story. He carried me. He led the meetings inside the prison. So it's possible. You know, I don't like giving opinions on experiences. Like if you were to call me, let's say you make all those amends, you call me up one day, you want to talk about that amends. I'm not going to be the one that's going to give you the guidance, because I know people that have actually had to go to prison as a result of making amends. You know, through people I've met over the years of doing this work. So there's not going to be one amends. I had a guy call me up one time. He had burned his house down, arson, and collected all the insurance money and got away with it. And he wanted to make amends. And so I put him in touch with somebody that knew somebody that had that same experience. Right? He was instructed to get an attorney. The attorney contacted the insurance company, and they went through all the channels. There are ways to get clean. Right? But what I don't want here is don't focus on those. You guys are too new. Right? If you've been ripping and running for 10, 15 years, I guarantee you got a pretty significant 8-step list. And you got a lot of amends that you can make. And just put those ones that terrify you on the never list and devote all your energy into making the other ones. And then see what kind of relationship you now have with those amends. It will change. I just want to tell a couple of stories. I was a valet at the VA hospital, and I used to steal change and Oxycontin and Xanax out of the cars of these veterans, right? They'd come into the hospital to go in for their doctor's appointment, and they all had some nice, nice scripts in their car, and and then they'd always have a ton of change. And so, you know, I would take a dollar in change from this car. I mean, we're parking 300 cars a day. I mean, I've got like a big fat pocket at the end of the day, right? And I didn't do this every single day. Like, if certain supervisors were there, you knew not to do it. So I'm when I get sober, I'm trying to figure out, like, how do I calculate this number of how much I stole? So I came up with a number, and I want to say it was like $400 or $500 probably, because those prescriptions are not expensive, right? You know, street value of Oxycontin is one thing, but on a prescription, it's really nothing. So I talked to someone who had been sober, and we walked through it. And so I walked myself into, I can't remember if I went to like the public relations or the HR office first. I told them why I was there. I was a valet and I stole money and medication out of the vet's cars, and I'd like to clean it up. And when I tell you, they probably thought I was from another planet. I mean, the two ladies looked at each other like, what the hell are we doing with this guy? They didn't know what to do with me. So they sent me to another office, and it was either HR sent me to public relations or public relations sent me to HR. right? They did the exact same thing with me. They're like, we don't know what to do with you. So then they sent me up to the deputy of the VA upstairs, right? This was at the Claremont in Atlanta, Georgia. It was a big VA hospital there. And so I go up and I tell the secretary of the deputy of the VA what I'm trying to do. And she has no idea what to do. And I said, would you mind if I just send him an email, right? And so I send him an email. I craft this long letter, never get a response, right? And I can't remember if I went back and asked or I looked it up online, but I found out there's this place called the Fisher House. And what the Fisher House does is they help veterans transition back into society when they get back from being overseas or deployed. I donated all the money there. Right? I share that experience with you because there was something in me that knew I had to take all those steps. I had to do what I mean, that was a reflection. Like I would hear Mark over and over, how free do you want to be? And I latched onto it. I want to be free. I don't want my mind to ever take me back to a place where it says an anesthetic is how I deal with the psychological pain of life. I don't want to be in that position. And I went to that position. One other one I want to talk about. My high school basketball coach. Me and my friends, I forget, we like skipped school one day. We had basketball practice that evening, but we all skipped school and we were down in this little neighborhood called Little Five Points. And we see our basketball coach's wife having an affair. All right, we're at this record shop and like we're all of us are like, isn't that Coach Hendricks? You know, oh shit. Isn't that coach's wife? And so fast forward, he's making us run suicides. Wait, I mean, like every time we mess up, we're running suicides. And so we all started talking about his wife cheating on him under our breaths in practice, right? It comes out later that she's cheating on him. He ends up having like a nervous breakdown. And dude, we were still dogging him even after it happened because we were so adversarial with him because a lot of us didn't like him. So I get sober. I got to go. This is from high school, guys. I got to go clean this up. And I remember he didn't respond to my first few attempts to contact him, but then he reached out to me, right? And we met at a restaurant, and we sat down. Dude, I mean, it was hard for me to hear him to that day get emotional over his basketball players doing that to him, right? But he told me the only reason he had even attempted to contact me because his wife was in the program. His wife told him it was probably a good idea that I go meet with him, and it was probably important for me. Right. And we had a really cool conversation. You know, I asked him what I could do to make it right, and he said, just come in there and having that experience with him made it right. Right. Pretty wild. I'm going to let Brandon talk for I got so many stories. Huh?
How many times do you attempt, like, if you're not getting response?
It depends. Like, if you send something on Facebook, you can see if they read it, right? So I usually tell the guys, if you send two messages on Facebook, they look at it. Now, you're not making the amends. You're trying to set up an appointment or get a phone number so you can call them. If they see twice that they've read your attempt, I tell them, turn the note card over. You know, you can say, this one's complete. Now the ball's in her court. Sometimes I've got guys who will make a phone call, send a message on Facebook Messenger, maybe send an email. So it's a two or three attempts. And then they know what's going on at that point, in my opinion.
I'll answer that with one of my stories. To me it varies, and that's an interactive process with my sponsees, and the specific thing is to how many attempts we make and what it is. And the thing that I find with a lot of people is when they make the approach, they're very unclear as to why they're making the approach, and that leaves it very gray. Here is a very specific amends email. Please allow me to expand on my request to meet with you. I have been seeking to find you for several years. In the past, it was an attempt to make a direct amends to you, to pay you for the money I stole from you, and to remove the judgment you have against me on my credit report. The money you gave me as earnest money is still in the escrow account of this attorney. You indicated your previous email that you were paid some amount. However, I am unsure how this is possible as I did not pay you. The money in the escrow account is yours and will be in that account until the funds are released as a result of the satisfaction of the judgment. I do not believe my journey in trying to find you and eventually finding you is simply
to pay you your money. It may be, but it is my experience that a journey such as I have been on has a deeper, much more spiritual purpose. I must disclose to you that I earnestly want to meet with you for two reasons. The first, a more self-serving reason, is that my family and I intend to purchase a home in the next 45 days. Until the judgment you have against me is satisfied, I will be unable to purchase this home. The irony is not lost on me. The second reason is I would like to sit across from you and better understand how the harm I caused you made you feel, to see if I've left anything out, to ask you how I can make things right with you. The forgiveness you offer in your previous email is appreciated. If you have reconciled this matter and wish to have no further contact with me, I understand and will respect your wishes. Independent of your wish to have further contact with me, please contact this attorney at this number to complete the necessary paperwork to recover the money I stole from you. If you choose to not contact the attorney and complete the necessary paperwork, I understand your desire to not assist me, as I in no way had concern for you and your family when you called upon me to assist you. I am a sober member of Alcoholics Anonymous. As a part of my spiritual journey and my recovery, it is imperative that I constantly seek to further and deepen my relationship with God. It is also a personal belief that the best way for me to better seek and experience God is through analyzing my conduct and my interaction with all of God's children. Through the spiritual journey, I face my resentments, fears, and conduct towards others, and see how my selfish, dishonest, self-centered, and fearful behaviors dominate my life and lessen my ability to experience God and His children. A part of this process is to make direct amends to people I impacted as a result of my behavior. You are one of these individuals. I do not make this approach with the disillusionment that I am a good guy or that I ever have been. Today I seek God with the hope that through the consciousness of that experience I may become a better husband, father, friend, worker, and member of society. Perhaps our paths will cross as we trudge the road to happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then. That's pretty thorough and clear what I'm trying to do, isn't it? He did not contact me back. The matter was settled. He did contact the attorney and it was taken care of. What I would do in my early sobriety is I'd call or email somebody and say, hey, do you want to go to lunch? They would not reply. I don't know why, right? And then I would say, well, I made an approach. That's not an approach. I've harmed you, and I would like the opportunity to make it right with you. Would you be willing to sit with me? That is a correct approach. If the person says, I have no desire to see you, done. Cross that one off the list. We try to kind of like, I see this with a lot of the guys I sponsor, is they try to rape people with an amend. Like they're like, hey, you want to go to lunch? And then they're like, hey, I harmed you, and this is what the other person may not want to like have that experience, right? Make it real clear why you're making the approach. Treat the other people the way you would want to be treated, right? Why do you want to meet with me? I hate you. I have no desire to ever see you again. Explain what it is that why you want to meet with them. Then maybe they'll meet with you. Maybe they won't. Either way, it's clear and the choice is theirs. Most of the amend stories I have are from further back because I've cleaned up all the stuff that needs to be cleaned up. The coolest stories I got today are like things that amends that my sponsees have made, but I can't share their stories. So I wish I could, but it's just, this is, as a sponsor, this is the coolest part. This and when they start sponsoring other people is the coolest part. When they're actually making the amends and you get it, they report back to you, this is what happened when I went and made that amend, how I got free. This book, Sermon on the Mount, it dissects a lot of my stuff, but one of the things that it dissects is the Lord's Prayer. And in it, it makes the statement that if your prayers are not being answered, search out your consciousness and see if there is not someone with whom you have yet to forgive. You have to forgive yourself, but you cannot forgive yourself sincerely until you have forgiven others first, right? There's all these people out there that they're maybe financially, they're not doing very well. But when I sit down and talk to them, guess where they have a shit ton of amends? Financial. People are struggling in intimate relationships with the opposite sex. Guess where they have a ton of amends? In intimate relationships with the opposite sex. Maybe they're struggling in their career. Guess where they have a ton of amends? See the pattern here? Maybe in their career, right? This stuff's all connected, guys, and this is where you really start to see it. This is where you really start to see how the way that we live life affects our future life. When you clean up the stuff in your life, watch that area change. There are a ton of people that I know, like I'll tell sponsees all the time, make the amend and watch the relationship change. People that they hate that they work with, that, oh man, they're 10th stepping all the time. This motherfucker, blah, blah, blah. Okay, well, that actually you harmed. Go make amends to that. Watch the relationship change. And then they report back to me. We actually had a great conversation today. I was helpful to him. We experienced this. We sat and had lunch together today. I thought you hated that guy. He's actually not that bad, right? There's so many times where people that spiritual life's not a theory, we have to live it. This is where you really start living this way of life. I'll tell you, you want to have some fun? Go have, if you're ever a discussion leader, have amends as the topic. Tarek and I have both done it recently, and it's fun to watch the room squirm. You know why? Most people don't make them. They have some theory about how they work and how they're supposed to work. And you don't make those and you don't make those. But you know, the people that actually make these things, you can watch them. When they walk free. Okay? These ninth step amends that people misunderstand completely because they don't understand where they fall in the book or what they're related to. I told you that we got that meeting where we meditate on each line, right? If you take the ninth step amends promises and you look at them individually, they are so powerful. If we are painstaking about this phase of our development, what phase? Making amends. We will be amazed before we are halfway through with our amends. We are going to know a new freedom and a new happiness as the result of making our amends. We will not regret the past nor wish to shut the door on it. We will comprehend the word serenity and we will know peace as the result of making our amends. No matter how far down the scale we have gone, we will see how our experience with making amends can benefit others with making their amends. That feeling of uselessness and self-pity will disappear. We will lose interest in selfish things and gain interest in our fellows because I've made amends with those people and I realize that maybe some of them aren't so bad. Self-seeking will slip away. Our whole attitude and outlook upon life will change as the result of making amends. Fear of people and economic insecurity will leave us. You know why? Because I've cleaned it up with everybody and I don't owe anybody any money anymore. I'm free. We will intuitively know how to handle situations which used to baffle us, and we will suddenly realize that God is doing for us what we cannot do for ourselves because God's walked through all of those crazy amends with me, and I'm unharmed. Are these extravagant promises? Fuck no, they're not. They are being fulfilled among us only as quickly or as slowly as we make our amends. They will always materialize if we actually make our amends. This is Tarek's experience. This is my experience. The rest of the fellowship does not understand the ninth step promises. They don't. They live in this concept of injure them or others, and I'm others. this is the straight definition of the word others means that you cannot be included in others. But people believe that. I don't know where it came from. Some watered down bullshit AA, CA stuff that just is an escape from actually having to work the full program. Don't work the full program, fine, but don't sell us on some bullshit version of it. So, Tarek said that he refers more people to me for relationship stuff. Well, there's a reason for that, because I ruined a perfectly good marriage. I also have the best relationship I know of, period, other than maybe my parents that have been married for, you know, over 50 years. There is nobody that I admire their relationship with their spouse the way that I feel about my relationship with my spouse. Is she perfect? No, but she's perfect for me. And I'm perfect for her, and we have a magical relationship. And so I get generally the four types of guys I sponsor are guys that their significant other just kicked them out, their wife or significant other is getting ready to kick them out, their wife or significant other is getting ready to kick them out, and they are unaware of this fact. It's a surprise to them. Or the fourth type, which is the guys that are just completely incapable of relationships, period. Those are the types of guys that I generally sponsor because I have experience with, don't do this because I did that and that didn't work out well. Do this because this works out much better. And there are several guys that were in that fourth category of incapable of relationships, and they're married now and have multiple kids and have happy marriages. There are a number of people that have called me over the years because they think that their relationship is completely fine, but their spouse just moved out on them, like all of a sudden. Oops. Or their significant other is telling them that they need to move out and they need some space. I have made the amend to the mother of my children. It was not easy. It took some time because she when I say like it was difficult to have a conversation with her without her explaining what was wrong with me, I mean it. Like every conversation was about how worthless I was. And I would sit there and take it until the loop would cycle back and it would repeat and she would keep piling on the same negative stuff. But before I actually got engaged to my current wife, it was like, look, this amend has to be made. I'm unwilling to enter a new relationship with a woman until that one's clean. And so she agreed to meet with me, and it was a conversation with a lot of emotion for her. She was very upset. I've been taught to ask three questions. How did what I do to you make you feel? That's their opportunity for me to see how my actions actually impact their life. And she had a lot of things to tell me about how it made her feel. And then there was the terrifying question with her of have I left anything out? Have I done any other harms to you that I'm unaware of? And I feel like there was a list there that she could have laid into me over, but she didn't. And then, the dreaded question of, well, what do I need to do to make it right with you? See, the word amend means to make whole, to mend, right? It's not an apology. It's to amend. How do I make it right with you?
And she, I was worried about that. I was worried she was going to ask for more money and all this stuff. And you know what she said? She said, stay sober for your kids. I left that amend thinking I won, right? Like, no big deal. That's it? That's all you need me to do. Let's plan on doing that anyways. Cool. Rock on. Well, over the years, I've come to understand more of how significant that was, right? Yeah, I've buried a lot of people. I've had a lot of guys that called me their sponsor cause massive wreckage in the lives of their families. My daughter, I don't know how long it was when she finally confronted her mother about, you know, why'd you leave dad? Because dad's pretty cool, right? Like, I mean, it's all spiritual and shit. And the mother of my children told her, she goes, you know, the man that your dad is today is not the man I was married to. He's somebody different. So naturally, you know, your kids are going to, if you've been living a spiritual basis of life for a while, they're going to think you're pretty cool. And this is a letter from my daughter that expresses how she feels about me. So she's 14 when she wrote this. She was 4 when her mother kicked me out. She says, I love you so, so, so much, and I'm so grateful that you are my dad. You teach me something every day, and you make me feel so loved. Every Tuesday I get excited because we get to go to dinner. I love spending time with you and all of our conversations that come along with them. I feel so grateful for the life that you've helped Mom make for my brother and I. You've taught me so much about life that helps prepare me for what is to come. You've showed me strength, love, and perseverance through everything you do. I love spending time with you so much, whether it's car rides, sitting on the couch, going to the grocery store, going to dinner, or cooking in the kitchen. You unknowingly, or maybe you do know, that you are making me so strong. But mostly, you make me feel appreciated. You do some of the smallest things like sending me your cheesy Bitmojis or getting me cookies and cream Hershey's bars. It just makes me feel important, which means a lot. I love how you set aside time every week to go eat dinner with me, or how you call after every dance weekend. I love how you show up to every performance with flowers. How you always write special notes in my cards. There are so many things that you do that I love about you and I appreciate you, but mostly I wanted to say I love you. I hope you have an amazing birthday. So it wasn't too long after I got this letter that, you see, that her mother, the woman that couldn't talk to me without speaking negatively to me, when she was engaged to an alcoholic, she called me to come change the locks on her house so that he wouldn't come in. I was the one that gave her the money to pay off the furniture that they had purchased together so that she could be done with it. I'm the one that she refers her friends, husbands, and boyfriends to that need help. I'm the one that she called to do a 12-step call on her fiance in the hospital. But
she, there was one day where she called me and it floored me because one of my daughter's best friends, they were on the way over to her best friend's house because the night before the dad had drank himself to death. And here's the mother of my children and my 14-year-old daughter going to the house of somebody to comfort the family. And I had to tell them how to be present and how to be there and what things to say, what things not to say, and how to approach that. And then last summer, my daughter sends me this text because she had gone to the beach with the family. And she said, I just wanted to text you and say, I'm so grateful you got sober. I just had to watch Anna and her family spread Scott's ashes, and it was the most awful thing. I love you so much and appreciate you more than you will ever know. Guys, that request of stay sober for your kids, it was big. We have no idea what God's plan for us is. And if I hadn't made amends, and I hadn't been willing to do this as a way of life, I don't know what would happen to my kids. I have two incredibly wonderful kids that have a full life that when their friends see their parents together at college orientation or college or high school graduation, they think that we're still married. That happens only because I was willing to make that amend. And I was willing to live that way of life to repair that relationship to the point where sometimes when her mom's depressed, she calls me and she it's like a 10th step call. She doesn't know what that is, but we talk through it and I give her some perspective and I help her along and I ask and I'm concerned about how she is and what things are. Guys, when you repair these relationships, everything changes. The way that the people interact with you, the way that you interact with them, the way that money flows into your life, the way that relationships flow into your life, the way that your career changes. If there is a magic in one of these steps, it's this one. This step has so much power. And it's the step that I see most people skimp on the most. We talked about yesterday, how yesterday was Founders Day. June 10th, 1935. You know what day that signifies? It signifies when Dr. Bob got and stayed sober. You know why Dr. Bob got and stayed sober finally? He became willing to make his amends. The first time Bill sobered him up, he said, I'm willing to do all that stuff, but I'm a doctor in this town and my reputation has already been tarnished. I'm not going to walk around and do that amends thing because I can't afford to lose my practice. And within a couple weeks, he was drunk. But when he actually became willing to approach people in his town and clean up the past, he stayed sober. This is it, guys. This is where it all happens.
We call this, and by the way, like, that might be one of my favorite stories to listen to. Just the you know, because I've been a witness to this man's experience, and his relationship with his children is something to witness. It really is for me. I'm glad he's in my life because I may, you know, he sponsors me more than I sponsor him. I'll be straight with you guys. You know, as he was reading the Mason's letter to him, man, it's like, man, like, I, you know, the possibility of, like, the relationships and where they, like, the humanity is experienced at a different level when this process is actually lived. Not talked about, but lived. And remember, it was agreed at the beginning that we would go to any lengths for victory over alcohol or drugs. So we call this weekend the What Any Length Looks Like Big Book Weekend. All we've done for the past 2 days is describe what any length looks like. Now, it's a massive commitment, guys. This is not for the faint of heart. This is for the mad dogs. The mad dogs. No. I'm going to read something, then we're going to stop. We're going to come back at 10 after 4. Until now, the steps have been preparing me for a level of humility beyond my conception. A level of humility before God and God's kids that truly sets me free to live in the sunlight of the Spirit. Admitting my powerlessness and doing some work to access that power, I now must humble myself before the power and clean up the mess I made of other people's lives. There's no room for ego. There's no room for pride. There's no room for me, just God. I, of my own power, would never consent, much less commence, to making amends, to add to or take away from, to set right my harms. But with the willingness that can only be accessed through God, I can face the people I've been avoiding, blaming, and resenting for a lifetime. I have my list. It was given to me by my sponsor after my fifth step. But do I have the willingness? Am I willing to go to any lengths for victory over dope? If I want to live free, I must. So I pray. I meditate. I ask for willingness to humble myself, to walk up to that person I used, the person I cheated, the person I lied to, and admit my wrong, to ask how the action made them feel, to ask if I've ever left anything, if I'd left anything out, and ask what I can do to make things right, to be willing to go to any length for victory over dope. And as the willingness creeps in, the fear is pushed out. As I trust God, all doubt leaves me. As God comes in, I go out. Then more God in, more me out. And then the courage born of grace catapults me, rockets me into the next step, the ninth step. The step when I'm finally back with God's kids. But this all comes as a result of humbly asking God for the willingness to make these amends. Humbly accepting that I am nothing without God. How free do you want to be? We'll see you guys in about 25 minutes.